We are so used to pushing ourselves to the limit that, like, okay, you start from, like, zero, below zero. You know, when you're pregnant, all your muscles get stretched. But to me, the hardest was, you know, the guilt at times. You know, when Jada was sick or little things here and there, like, she started to notice, like, when I would leave. And I would feel bad thinking, like, yeah, why am I leaving her to go to practice? Something that to me felt sometimes selfish.
Everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Big week. We have pre-Wimbledon chatter. We have John McEnroe wondering if Serena Williams would beat the number 700 ranked player, which has drawn all sorts of Sturm und Drang as we speak. But we have a much kinder, gentler guest. We have Kim Clijsters with us. Kim is one of the inductees in the 2017 class at the International Tennis Hall of Fame on July 22nd. She'll be joined by Andy Roddick in Newport. She is a longtime friend, and that does not put me in elite company. Everyone likes Kim Clijsters, Jamie Lasanti, as you will soon find out. She was at the French Open. We spoke a few weeks ago. She'll be at Wimbledon. She tells us this is a fun conversation with an all-time favorite, quite a good tennis player we often tend to forget, a four-time Grand Slam champion. Actually got to the semis or better at all four majors, former number one player, but she will be best recalled for her personality, which comes through in this interview. Really fun talk with Kim Clijsters. So let's bring her in now, shall we? How are you? Where are you?
I'm in Belgium. It's the last week of school, so we're starting to clean up the house and packing up everything so we can go to my husband Brian and the kids are going to the States to visit his side of the family, and then I'm going to Wimbledon on Saturday.
We'll see you there. I was thinking we could have done this just as easily on the Tennis Channel set in Paris last week, but thanks for doing this by phone. No Jersey Shore for you?
I'll go after Wimbledon.
You have a big date on July 22nd we'll talk about.
Okay.
I have a very important question for you.
Yes.
Would you beat the number 700 ranked male player right now?
Nope.
Just kidding.
No chance.
Are you following this craziness today?
No, I haven't. Actually, we have an international kids tournament going on, so I've been there all day. But I saw some tweets coming by, and yes, but I don't know how all big right. It's gone or has been blown up.
Oh boy, it's like you never know how big things really are anymore because it's your own social media feed.
Yeah.
But it's been quite a story today. You're running a tournament?
Yeah, we have an international kids tournament. It's 30 countries and it's not like the highest level of tournaments, but it's a tournament and kids keep playing, so they're guaranteed 5 matches. So we start tomorrow and then the finals is on Sunday, and so they have a match every day, and It's very well organized. It's an organization. It's called Ten Pro, and they go to different places in the world. They also went to Nadal's Academy. They'll go to Florida, I think, later this year. So I think they have about 5 or 6 tournaments a year.
And the kids get 5 matches per tournament. That's great.
Yeah, they keep so. Yeah, we have kids coming from Lebanon, from Syria, from New Zealand, from Canada, from the States. Some of them arrive the week before and they do a camp at my academy, and then they play in the tournament. Some of them, you know, arrive a few days before and they practice, but it's really good. Like it's a nice way to, you know, to see all the kids,
how
the
old?
Cultures together. And
that's great. How old are the kids?
It's from different age groups. So from 11 to about 15, 10 to 15. And then they divide them under different age groups and levels.
How old are your kids now? I know the answer to this, but tell our listeners.
Jada turned 9 in February.
Oh, man.
Jack is 3.5, and Blake is 7 months.
Do your kids know that you did your best work after you became a mother?
No, they don't, actually. No, they don't. My middle son actually asked me the other day if I also play tennis, which was actually very funny because there was a lot of people standing around him when he asked me, and they It was a funny moment.
Do you know where I'm going to be July 22nd? You should have told him. I was thinking, though, that there was a big story that came out. You don't know this because you're helping to run a junior event, but there was another big story today about Serena. She's on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. She is deeply, profoundly pregnant. There's a picture of her. It's like, remember the old Demi Moore shot?
Of course.
It's like that. But I did think, in all seriousness, there's this question of to what level will she be able to return? She says in the article very clearly she wants to get back to playing. Her career is ongoing. She's not even considering not coming back. But you're kind of the model here.
Yeah, which is, I've been asked that question a lot in the last few months since she announced that she was pregnant. And, you know, everybody's different. I mean, you know, she has all the experience. She has 23 Grand Slams before she got pregnant. I only had one, so she'll know how to do it better than I did. I had time, you know, when I had Jada, I took my time. I was about a year a little over a year before I started practicing again, and I really took my time to take care of Jada, and I wanted to be a mom, but I never thought I was going to come back, so that's probably the biggest difference.
What was it? You're home, you're a mom, life's good, you're a wife. What was the motivation?
Well, I had we had about a year where my father, he got sick, and we, you know, we took care of him, my sister and I, and we tried to, we tried to helped to make him feel better and get better, and went to all the appointments with him. But then he ended up getting worse and worse and passed away on January 4th in 2009. And maybe a month or 2 months later, I received an invitation to play at Wimbledon when they opened a new center court with the roof, and it was going to be a big thing. It was a big event, and they asked me if I wanted to play with Tim Henman against Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi, and of course I felt very honored that I was allowed to be in that in that group of past players. And so I was like, okay, I really would like to do this. It might be fun. And, you know, I was thinking about playing some exhibitions here and there anyway, but it was so soon that I really hadn't made up my mind at all about tennis. And then that came along, and then I started training again, also to take my mind off, you know, the situation with my father. And tennis to me has always been a way to let go of a lot of things, emotions and stress and pressure and so tennis always helped me in that way, and I just went to practice again, and you know, in the first 2 weeks, you know, I really enjoyed it. It was making me feel better, and I started to get fitter. But I started to really feel the urge to maybe not just play exhibitions. And
you're still in your 20s, and you know, you're
so that's what I thought. I was like, okay, maybe I'm too young to play exhibitions, but I didn't want to tell anybody about, I really want to come back, because I just had, you know, a couple years or a year and a half before I had my farewell here in Belgium, and so I kind of felt a little bit like, weird about it, you know, announcing, I'm going to come back. So I kept it quiet, and I just spoke to, of course, my husband, because he was still playing basketball at the time, and to my fitness coach who traveled with me the previous years. And and then I told them, and they were like, look, we're all behind you if this is what you're feeling, and just keep it very low key for now, you know, work, you know, start to train again and slowly, but don't tell anybody. And and then we waited a little bit, and then we announced. My first idea was to start in 2010 in Australia. But then I was like, maybe we should play a few tournaments at the end of 2009 so that I can get used to, you know, traveling with a baby on tour, playing, you know, seeing how the level has changed, all those kind of things. Those were a lot of questions that I had, and I didn't really want to start with all those worries straight, you know, in Australia when you have a Grand Slam, a few weeks later. And
right.
So we were like, okay, let's do Cincinnati, Toronto, and the U.S. Open, and I got the wild card, and you know, obviously, things went.
I was gonna say you used that opportunity pretty well, as I recall.
Yeah.
What was the biggest challenge? Is it physical?
The physical part is fine. Like, we are so used to pushing ourselves to the limit that, like, okay, you start from, like, zero, below zero. You know, when you're pregnant, all your muscles get stretched, your core stability, which is something that we train for, that I at least train for almost every single day when I was, you know, in top shape. So there, like, on those kind of things, you have to really, really start from scratch. But to me, the hardest was, you know, the guilt at times, you know, when Jada was sick or little things here and there, like, she started to, you know, notice, like, when I would leave, like, and I would feel bad thinking, like, yeah, why am I leaving her to go to practice or to go, you know, that something that to me felt in a way sometimes selfish. And so I kind of felt a little bit guilty, and I think that was at times the hardest to balance, the times where I felt, a little bit guilty about, you know, maybe not being the parent that I imagined I would be, and also not being the athlete that I thought I should be, because it was hard at times to balance. And I couldn't, you know, when we were away in tournaments, I couldn't, you know, take my daughter to the zoo because I had to rest because I had to play a game the next day. So a lot of those kind of things were at times for me hard to balance.
Can I give you a short ball that you can slam? Can I give you a fluffy little lob right now?
Of course.
It seemed like you had a nice balance with your husband. It seemed like he was picked up a lot of the slack.
He made it work as a couple. He did, and that's the thing. And that's why he was the first person when I, you know, was thinking about coming back. Like, I wouldn't have been able to do it if he wasn't open for this, you know, for this idea. And he was getting close to, maybe he could have played maybe one or two more seasons in his basketball career. But it was, it felt right, you know, and he was excited for it. You know, I stopped playing, you know, almost a year or 2 years after I met him. So he wasn't a part of that lifestyle for a while. So I think for him, it was also a nice challenge and a nice adventure for all of us in a way. And then, you know, of course, I also had Nicole, who was our nanny, who traveled with us all around the world so that Brian and I could also get away at times, you know, just for us as a couple. And it's the balance was something that to me was the hardest to you know, I didn't want my kid to be brought up by a stranger, but then at the same time I also wanted to be a good tennis player, and so it's that balance where you kind of have to juggle but I think any first time mother goes through that. I think a little bit, it's just
a familiar situation.
A lot of it was in the spotlight and with cameras but you learn to deal with it.
What's the balance like now? Is Brian still with the same team, or is he with a new?
He's starting a new team in August. He's going to a bigger one of the biggest teams here in Belgium. So he's done well. Like, he's done really well in the last few years where he's been coaching. He's always improved himself. So now he gets an opportunity this year to work at a higher club with a bigger budget, and which is something that's been very exciting for him to do.
Are you Mrs. J. Wright?
Yeah, kind of.
No, I don't know. What's your role? Where do you fit into this? You the coach's wife, or are you?
I listen a lot. I'm definitely not. I don't know a lot about basketball. I've learned a lot in the last few years, but when he starts going about tactics and plays and all that. It's you know, sometimes he loses me, but there's times where, you know, if he talks about players or personalities, or when, you know, players come over with wives and kids and just to look to help, you know, look for good apartments, little things to make them feel welcome, just a family kind of atmosphere. I think that's something that I like to help out as much as I can. And I've met some, you know, really good women that were, you know, wives or girlfriends from players, and some that when my husband was playing that were still in touch. I like to, I grew up, you know, also traveling and at times being in different countries and not knowing a lot about the place. So it's nice to help when they come over.
I think I met your husband before I met you.
Really?
I had to do a story on Villanova basketball once, and I think I saw all their dorm rooms. I'm glad you didn't see that. That might have impeded your marriage. The Villanova
basketball. He doesn't tell me much about that stuff. So there's a guy named. A reason for that.
Ask him about a guy named Alvin Williams. All right, we'll talk about that later. Give us you have a big date. You're July 22nd. You are being inducted in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. along with Andy Roddick. Can you give us your speech right now?
I'm working on it. Just like three minutes. I'm going to keep it.
Give us a sample.
Keep it a little bit private until then. But obviously, obviously the speech is something that is a big moment, and I've seen past players give speeches that to me completely blew my mind. And Andre Agassi's speech is, of course, to me the
legend.
Most special one I think that I've seen so far.
You mean the one he gave for Steffi?
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be emotional, and also, the big thing that I've noticed is the difference in culture. When I told my family about, and my family, I mean like my sister, mother, grandparents, friends here, they don't really know the value of what it means to be inducted into the Hall of Fame and how special it is and how big of an honor it is. But when I told my husband's side of the family, like my parents-in-law and my brothers-in-law, and they were like over the moon about it. They were like, we really want to be there, and can we already order tickets and blah blah blah. So for them, that's when I realized how special it is. I've been traveling to the States since I'm 12 years old, and so I've seen how unique it is in different sports as well. But even here in Belgium, tennis is not the biggest sport. Soccer, cycling is are the most popular sports here, but we don't have that. It doesn't exist in our culture to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. We have awards at the end of the year which make you Player of the Year or Athlete of the Year, those kind of things, but we don't have Hall of Fame awards
That's great. I mean, it's for your husband. Your husband will tell you too. This is the ultimate. This is it.
Very, very, proud and, So,
who's introducing
nice
you?
To be in that situation, and we had a nice moment in Paris on center court where Gustavo Kuerten received his ring. That was before the men's final that they did that on center court for him. So, I think, in a way, I would like to try to help as much as I can to realize or to make the tennis world here in Europe realize how unique it is to be amongst that group of people who are inductees. So that's maybe a little bit of...
That's great. I don't know. Do you think... it's interesting because if you're a baseball player, a basketball player, like that's what you shoot. I mean, that's the ultimate. And players sort of have a rough sense of what they need to be eligible. And it's always this big debate about who should get in and who shouldn't. And if Steph Curry quit playing tomorrow, would he be a Hall of Famer? It's a huge deal. What in tennis, when you were playing, I mean, is this something players discuss? Do players say, hey, listen, hey, Li Na won her second major. That means she ought to be in the Hall of Fame. Is it something that, from a player standpoint, you're thinking about during your career?
No, actually, no. To be honest, I didn't think about it, but at the same time, I never thought about, the big awards here. So it's not something. I never played with those kind of things in my mind. No.
Who's introducing you? Can I ask?
The coach that I've had for many, many years. He was when I was 11 years old. My coach. His name is Carl Maas. He's been there
throughout
my career, and he's the director of my tennis academy now, so we're still close. And so when I thought about somebody who, when they asked me and who's going to introduce you, it's almost easy to pick somebody who's famous, and I could have asked some players that I got along with, but when somebody really special to me and who I feel like has helped me very, very much in my career. Not just tennis level, but also on a personal level, is Carl, and so for me it was almost a no-brainer.
That's great. Do you know who's introducing Andy?
Is it Doug?
Yeah. Doug Spreen is introducing Andy, which is very similar to what you were thinking. You.
Ah, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I'm very, very excited that I get to share this moment with Andy as well. We've always.
I was gonna say, you guys know you kind of grew up
and
together.
Played juniors, and so right. It's nice to have this together.
What?
And I've never met his family, so that will be nice too.
Oh, that lovely, lovely people. What's your? You look back on your career, and you're one of you have a life now. You have three kids, so you're not living in the past, but. What kind of pops to mind? I'm always interested with former athletes. It's seldom what you would think as a fan would be sort of the big moments or the big takeaways. Like what are your takeaways from your career?
It's a lot of people think about the wins and the tournament, like the victories and but to me it's the what I really enjoyed was working towards something. Is having, let's say, 8 weeks to get ready and to train to try to be in the best shape possible for the U.S. Open and then, winning 7-5 in the third in a semifinal or whatever. Like, those moments is what you do it for. And it's actually the road towards that is what I really enjoyed. And there were times where it was tough and it's tough on your body, tough mentally, but the satisfaction that you get when you do well and that you know that it pays off and that you can be fitter as your opponent, when it comes down to, being 5-all in the third and being fit enough to beat her, those are very, very satisfying moments. And I think that's what I look back to is that's what I enjoyed the most, is with my fitness coach being able to say, okay, now we have a 6-week window where we're going to train and just completely trusting him blindly and just do everything that he says and believe that, it will benefit when it has to.
Can I make you blush?
Sure.
I think something you did that was really important was you came along at a time, it was sort of after, Celis and Graf, and it was after the Williams sisters were sniping with Martina Hingis, mm-hmm. and there's another Belgian player who sort of wore a game face. I think it was really important that you came out there and showed that you could be congenial, you could be friends with other players, you could win majors, but it didn't have to come at the expense of relationships.
No.
But by accident
it was
or design?
Of times because, when you're a teenager, I was 15, 16 years old when I, I just turned 17, I think, when I played my first French Open. And it's you're so young and you get thrown in this world that all of a sudden you're almost not allowed to be a child anymore, and because so much gets expected of you, and you're supposed to talk to media like an adult, and like you know everything about the world, what's going on, politics, and about whatever this person said, and you have to give your comments about it, and it's really hard at times, and I realized at a young age, and I think especially like my father who traveled me at times, that it was really important for me to still look at tennis like I did when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. And that was, I loved the sport. To me, the human side of things was so much more important. I could easily play somebody and lose the next day and lose to that opponent, but still talk to them in the locker room and without holding anything personal
right.
towards them. And which is, I also was in the opposite situation where somebody wouldn't even or talk to me the day before and then knowing that maybe the draw came out and we could play each other in, maybe the second or the third round and they completely, like, that's it. Like, you're done. And so to me, that was never the case.
Did you ever feel pressure?
You step out on court, you try to be the best player you can be and be, I think, mature enough to know that, okay, you're not going to win every match, but, just try to be the best player that I could be. And at the same time, like, human being, too, like, be respectful. And, that was something that my father valued very much.
Did you ever feel pressure? I mean, did anyone ever say, listen, maybe you want to be more combative, maybe you're, I hate to even say this, but maybe you're too nice?
I got that question asked.
No, but I don't mean from people like me.
Finals, and you're in that situation where the media is like, okay.
No, screw the media. I mean,
you think you're too nice to win, and
no,
I was like, no, like I know I can beat these players. I've beaten a lot of them before, just not in a Grand Slam final, and nerves too. I was Yeah, I now that I look back on it, I know that I wasn't ready to beat Jennifer Capriati in that final, although I came very close. But in my head, there was no way I could have won it, just because I was so overwhelmed with nerves, and it would have been too soon to have won a Grand Slam.
You came close. What is that? You know what, players? Let me stop you there, because I want to ask you this, because that's a really good. Stan Wawrinka used this exact same. What does that mean? Does that mean sort of, I'm having trouble gripping the racket? Does that mean on that short forehand, I'm going to have trouble hitting a kill shot? When players say I wasn't ready because I was just, the nerves were too much, how does that express itself during the match?
The difference with me in let's say, the final against Jennifer to, let's say, the one where at the US Open where I beat Mary Pierce, I feel like everything connected, my mind and my body. Whereas everything connected, like, okay, I was a little bit nervous, but I was able to deal with it. And I dealt with it in a way where I knew that my nerves wouldn't take over my way of thinking. Whereas against Jennifer Capriati, I mean, you can ask me anything about this match and I won't remember, because my mind was so, I can't even describe it. It's like I wasn't in the moment.
And yet, you came 2 points from winning, right?
I know, but you don't read the match the same way,
right?
Because there's such a big distraction or such a big distraction, I think, that takes you away from being right there.
It's really, I'm telling you, you tell your husband, tennis is so much harder than basketball, where there are four other guys and you can always, pass to the point guard, and it's just...
I know, but at the same time, there's moments where, you know, when I see him with his team and that there's a lot of moments where I feel like, it's nice to share those moments together. But then at the same time, there's moments where I think like, oh my God, like, thank God I wasn't a team player, because... You know, there's players who, you know, go out and party till early in the morning and then they have to play a big game, and I couldn't deal with that. Like, you know, you either are rolling or you're not there at all. So, there were times where it was nice to see, but then also times where I think, I'm happy I was an individual sports athlete, and if I didn't practice hard, I knew it was my fault, and if I worked hard, then, you know, I knew it was, you know, in my hands to try and be better than my opponent, so...
It's just you up there on July 22nd.
Yeah.
So wait, I asked real quick. I asked readers for I got a bunch of questions for you. Like speed round, like one sentence.
Okay.
What does Kim think about how one of her biggest rivals, Venus Williams, is still out there battling today? What do you think?
I admire it very much, and especially with the, you know, the ups and downs that she's had. You know, going through the disease and you know, her sister losing their sister and just everything. I think it's amazing that they're still battling, and she's done so much for our sport. I've every tournament she was in meetings trying to negotiate and talk to tournament directors and sponsors, and so she's been you know, almost like the new Billie Jean King, I think, of our era.
Hey John, I heard Kim will be coaching Anina Wickmeyer. Can she confirm that? If so, how does it feel to be back in a new role?
Well, this was kind of a big thing in Belgium the last couple of days. I'm not going to be her coach. I'm going to help her out at Wimbledon. I'm there to do a few events anyway. I'm going a couple of days earlier so I can just train with her. And her and her coach split up a week ago. And because she trains, when she's in Belgium, she trains at our academy, and I've, you know, worked with her a little bit before. Like, I hit with her, and I when I was in Australia, I helped her. But I'm not going to be her full-time coach. I think I'm going to be there to help her, but I'm not going to be the
consultant.
Full-time coach.
All right, what else do we have for you? Real quick. How far does Ostapenko make it at Wimbledon?
Well, I definitely think she has the game to make it to beat a lot of the good players. I'm just very curious to see how she will deal with the pressure and the new role that she's going to be in. So that in Paris, I was curious to see how she, You know, how well would she play when it came down to big moments in the quarterfinal or in the semifinal? And especially in the final, it was, you know, when she was a set and three love down. Like, it was just interesting to see how fearless she was and just kept going for her shots and because she had nothing to lose. And now I'm curious to see in this new role how she will react and cope with, you know, players trying to beat her and maybe trying a little bit harder when they get to play her. And so that's definitely a player who I'll be very interested to watch when I get to Wimbledon.
I wonder if my theory on that, don't you think it probably helps her? She only has a few weeks. If this were Australia and she had months and months to be a Grand Slam champion and have the agent meetings and the photo shoots, like, this is...
That's the thing, and I don't know, you know, the team around her. Of course, you know, I'm sure when she went home after Paris, it would have been very crazy.
Right.
So a lot of things would have changed for her, and you know, the way she's going to be a lot more known in her country, she's going to be known in the tennis world, all around the world. And players are going to look at her differently, and it's not easy. Like, when I played the French Open when I was 17 and I made it to the semis and I played Jennifer, you know, I didn't even win and my world completely changed. So I'm curious. I just hope she has a good group of people around her that will keep her focused on tennis so that she can be consistent in the next part of the season.
It's exciting either way. Mm-hmm. All right, this was great. So we'll see you at Wimbledon.
Okay.
And again, July 22nd is your Hall of Fame induction.
Yes.
That was a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, special thanks to Kim Clijsters. That was a great conversation. Really enjoyed talking to her. That was really interesting stuff. Thanks, as always, to Jamie Lasanti, our producer across the desk. We will, from housekeeping, we'll do some Wimbledon seed reports, a Wimbledon roundtable. We'll have some Tennis Channel coverage, and we will try to do more podcasts from Wimbledon itself starting next week. But thanks for listening this week. Again, Kim Clijsters, boy, what a lovely human being. What a well-deserving Hall of Fame class this year. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your suggestions. As always, feel free to keep them coming. This week, I actually sent out a tweet asking for questions. We used some of your questions as well. We'll try to do more of that. Hat tip to Richard Deitch for that tip. Again, we'll be doing this from Wimbledon next week. Thanks for joining us. You can listen on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are sold. Feel free to subscribe on iTunes as well. That'll do it for this week, and we'll be in England on Monday. All right. Have a good week, everyone.